found myself in a position where I was homeless. And I remember sitting on the street and just watching people go by. From that point there, that's when my life started to change. I was just doing whatever I could, as well as trying to keep myself on the straight and narrow. When they start to get some momentum in life, they start to forget that it's all about the mental strength. We managed to get planning on it, and that was my first development.
It's nothing like the Nationals. We can feel that we're part of something special.
Welcome to the New Homes Podcast. In this episode, we speak with Joe and Mel from SME house builder Imperial Homes. Founder Joe opens up about his past as a homeless drug addict and reveals how his experiences have helped to positively shape and build Imperial Homes. I want to say a massive thank you to Joe for opening up about such important issues which are rife across our industry. We hope you enjoy the conversation, and if you'd like to hear more about the sales and marketing of new homes, don't forget to hit subscribe. So Joe, most of the people that I sit here with have had a very corporate and traditional route into house building. I know your journey's been fairly different. So before we get onto that, tell me what Imperial Homes looks like today.
So today, Imperial Homes is a private and social developer. So we concentrate on both sectors, really, and a bit of contracting. So we build for housing associations. We do private sites for private sale. And we also do a bit of contracting for certain house providers. So we do about 150 units a year. And we've been quite consistent on that over the last few years. We've had a consistent growth from day dot every year. We've provided more units, and we've got a sort of a steady flow of land bank in front of us, and have a very consistent flow of units getting sold on a monthly basis. So we are I would say, and this is probably some people have say this, that sounds a bit weird, but we feel that we're in the most stable market we've been in, due to the fact of everyone is just muddling along now, rather than all the ups and downs of not enough labour, not enough materials, house prices just shooting up. We feel pretty stable and secure at the moment, and the growth is a bit steadier, but it's still consistent, yeah.
Excellent. So talk to me now about your background, so your journey to where you are today at Imperial.
So my journey starts a long time ago. So I suppose probably the way I would start this is I didn't finish school, and I left school with no education, and left when I was 13 years old I wasn't a very teachable child, is probably the best word. So it didn't really sit well with me, school, they didn't really want me around. So I left and started groundworking at the time at like 14 years old, and got myself into quite a few problems of an early age, and found myself in a position where I was homeless and in a bit of a pickle with substance misuse, basically. So that the substance misuse and the drinking abuse started when I was about 13 or 14. That was sort of the start of my problems, basically. And as people know me today, I'm quite good at what I do. So as soon as I started doing something that was bad for me, I came quite good at it. And it seems a silly thing to say, but as soon as I grab hold of something, I sort of can't let it go. And it sort of grabbed hold of me, really. And I found myself in a position where I had no home. So I get a bit emotional. My family, they didn't turn their back on me, but they couldn't have me around. And I found myself homeless in Boscombe in Bournemouth, and sort of couldn't really find any way out. And it was a very difficult period, as you can imagine, of my life. And I remember I was sleeping in doorways, and a few things that sort of pop up when I think about it was how cold a floor is when you sleep on it. And you could be warm on the top, but just so fucking cold underneath. And I used to go into a public toilet, and they used to have hand dryers. I haven't been in a public toilet for like a long time now. I think that most of them are closed down. They built them, basically. And I used to just go in there and warm myself up. And then, yeah. And I remember sitting on the street and just watching people go by and just thinking, how the fuck do they live like that? Because I was just in such a rut. that I couldn't really see any way out. And luckily for me, you know, along that way, I sort of found myself in jails, institutions, and, you know, I died a few times of substance misuse, overdose. And I honestly didn't think there was going to be any way out. And I thought that was just my life. And it's sort of, at 20 years old, I was on, as I said, on the streets of Boscombe, just thinking, this is it. And luckily for me, an organisation got in contact with me, and they were the sort of street homeless team, and they worked hard, and they must have seen something in me that potentially I could have a new way of life. And they got me into a treatment centre. And today we do a lot of work with that treatment centre and a lot of sponsorship, and we've refurbed some of their houses through sponsorship work we've done to help them, because they're a different outfit to a lot of our rehabilitation centres. They will take people in without funding, and all their profit goes back in, so they struggle with the maintenance of the building. So we do a lot of work with them. And they basically took me in, and from the day I went into that treatment centre, and that was like 22 years ago on August the 7th this year, I've not been homeless, and I've not used a drug or drink since that point. And it, you know, from that point there, that's when my life started to change. But I do recognise that a lot of people just can't do it on their own, and it's not a choice of, yeah, we do silly things, but addiction and homelessness is not a choice. People don't want to sit out on the streets using and drinking and sleeping rough. It becomes a mental block that you just can't get out of. And until I had someone that put that effort into me and that energy into me, and I started to believe that it was true, because I couldn't believe myself, that's when the change started to happen. And I went into that treatment centre, and that's why I'm sort of based in Southampton today. That was in Southampton. And since that point there, that's when I started making some ground, basically. And I was in there for 3 months, and then went from there and started getting housing around Southampton. And I suppose the start of my property developing from that point was the fact that I went for a hostel and then stayed on the council list and then got a council flat. And I got a council flat in Shirley, and I had to stay in there 2 years, and then was able to do a right to buy. And I'd managed to save, over the 4 years of having this property and being out of treatment, I managed to save 6,000 quid, as well as pay my rent. And just, you know, I just got my head down, and I was working for people, subcontracting, or a bit of cash, you know. I was just doing whatever I could, as well as trying to keep myself on the straight and narrow, and getting that community around me to make sure that my mental state and my sobriety was all secure. Because I think people get a bit lost with that. When they start to get some momentum in life, they start to forget that it's all about the mental strength and the consistency, and what difference compounding is. And when you start doing the right thing and you compound that. But it's the same in business. It's the same with money. If you compound it, you know, the beauty of compounding is sheer success. And that's what I started to do. And I managed to buy that flat for a discounted price. And I still got that flat today. And I'll never sell it, because it's sort of my thing, really. And I often go there and just look at it. And from that point there, I managed to remortgage that, and as I said, that compounding gets some momentum. And then I spent about 10 years of working really hard, enjoying life as well, which I think is important, and buying refurbs and trying to get some buy-to-lets, and just sort of, I didn't really make a conscious decision to do this, but I always remember of when I was on the streets and going to people's bedsits to like spend a bit of time in someone's bedsit. And I always used to see the bloke who owned the bedsits and think, he's doing all right. You know, and that was my sort of, I don't know if it's an idol or something. And in Boscombe, there's a bloke that sort of owns everything. And I always used to think to him, you know, he's doing that because he's got property. So my secure, and it's still my security now of thinking, as long as I've got property, I'll be okay. And that's where my momentum came, rather than the fact of, I didn't think I was capable of developing. So I didn't look at that as a thing of what I'm going to start developing. It was more of a case of, I thought, I can get momentum, get money out of these houses and then buy another house. And I can do that. And I had the skill set of being able to refurb these houses. As I said, when I left school, I didn't have any, I couldn't even read and write, you know, it was that bad. But I was quite good with my hands. I was able to sort of learn on the job. Yeah, I've never been to college or learned any skill, but I was, luckily for me, I had that in the, so I was able to refurb his houses. And then I got to a point where I bought a house that, yeah, I didn't realise it had potential, and I'm quite open with this, that it had potential for development. And someone just said to me, an architect that I just got in touch with, said, I think you could knock that house down and get a few flats or houses on there. And that was the sort of the turning point. And I'm quite open to say that most of my journey is not a fact of me thinking, I know what's going to go on here, but it is of, I see an opportunity, or someone says something and I can then turn that around. And that's what happened at that point there. I bought this refurb. Someone said that there's potential there. Then once I know that something's going to happen, I can follow through with it. And as I said, with consistency and compounding, I will get to the end of it. And we managed to get planning on it, and that was my first development. And that sort of the money that I made out of that, which was not a lot, but to me it was at the time. If we looked at that deal today within our office, we'd go, that's not worth doing, because we know all the other bits that go into it. But at the point, I saw, like, you know, it was two houses and I saw like 35 grand 40 grand in it. To me, I was like, I'm gonna be a millionaire. Like, this is me set for life. And well, I've done a lot of the work myself, and with my dad's a ground worker, and he helped immensely with me. And we basically, yeah, built both houses ourselves, you know, done as much as we could to save as much money as we can, because we were tight. And yeah, we got that done. And at the end of that, I thought, this is what I want to do. I don't want to do refurbs, or I don't want to be painting and decorating student houses anymore, because that's, you know, that's what I was doing. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that at all. It's just I'd seen something different that I wanted. And from that, I went from development to development, and that was through, you know, quite a tough period in the building game at the point. And yeah, we just started pushing, and that was Dorrington Homes at the time. And I'd done quite a few developments under that. I started getting some right momentum with that, and I'm really enjoying the development side of it, of having a bit of land and getting the plans done and looking at the plans and trying to tweak them, and just little details on it. And I'm really starting to get a hunger for development. And then I was introduced to Chris Southcott. We decided to join forces. We were both on the same sort of road at the time. He was from a background of development. His dad had, you know, had successful companies, and I was just from a background, and we just sort of joined forces because we had a lot in common other than development, and we started Imperial Homes, and we started pushing with that, and really starting to make a bit of ground with that. There was a lot of hunger to push the company, but we've never sort of, with Imperial, I've never looked at anything and think, right, we're going to now hit that target, or, you know, it's just quite organic, but not in like a green organic. It's just, we sort of sit, we look at every site that comes in. Can we do it? Have we got the funds to do it? If not, can we do it in HA? Can we contract it? How can we do this site? And 9 times out of 10, we sort of are able to do that, and brought some really good people, like really strong people on board. And Rich Payne, it was like, one of the best things that happened to the company. He come on board. He's from a HA background, and he is like a dog with a bone with any deal. Like, even if the deal don't work, make it work some way. And it's funny, this morning I was just in the office and the site come over, and I said to him, is this any good then? He said, no, they want too much money for it. I said, oh, I'll bin it then. He said, no. We'll make it work. So, and he will get that to work. And he's a breath of fresh air, basically. And And with him by my side, he's very good on the stuff that I'm not, with the HA, the solicitors, that side of it. He's on it constantly. And as I said, I'm not very good at reading and writing, and it takes me a long time to do an email. So if I do an email, then it's quite important. And he could do like 400 emails in 20 minutes. He's one of them. I'm like, stop CCing me in, mate. Because I can't, just tell me what's going on. Yeah. So it works. It works really, really well. And then the next person we brought on that was really important was Ben Olds. And he's the land man. That them two have just took us. There's a lot of people within our company that are very valuable, and everyone's valuable. But them two have took it to another level through their contacts, the people they are, the way they present themselves, the deals that they can do. Yeah. So, and it's never been, obviously I started Imperial, but it's never been a thing of, right, we need to get that person. It's just that they sort of turn up. There's a conversation happen. We think, yeah, that's right for this company. And that's how it's always sort of happened, really. And as I said, I hate a target because I think without targets, the right people will go past any target that you give the money away. And that's sort of where we are, really.
Fascinating. And I think there's a couple of parts to your story that I'd like to kind of reflect on. So I think one of them is that it's not been a short journey to where you are today. And I think so many young people especially are looking for shortcuts to success, you know, the quick route to money. And I think, you know, your journey is proof that you can make it, you know, no matter what your current circumstances. But I think also the fact that you have always relied on other people, you know, you've sought advice, you've listened to advice, and even to the people you have today, you know, you clearly have people around you that give you advice. Would you say that that's kind of characterized throughout your life, or have there been points where you've kind of relied on your own strength and decision to get things done, or are you very much reliant on others?
It's a good point, to be fair. And I would say that I am very open for any discussion on any point. And I do have my visions, but I won't let my vision get in the way of what I think will succeed. And I am very much a person that, I don't think it's right to say that you allow people to then fail by and that's how they grow. But I will support any decision that anyone's making, and I will take on any advice that anyone's given me. And I think that stems from the fact of, probably up to the time that I was homeless, was all my own doing. And until at that point there, that I actually let someone in, allowing that help and support, I started succeeding. And I think it stems from that point there. I wouldn't want to do it on my own. You know, I hear a lot of successful people go, yeah, I'm driving for it. If there's not a group of us that are all doing it and we're all happy, and they're all succeeding. You know, the best thing I like, I sit in my office, and if one of our employees is buying a new house or buying a new car or they've just been on holiday, I feel that. And I think that's exactly what I'd like, because I think success on its own is probably a dark place that I wouldn't want to be. So in answer to your question, I 100% agree with that. And I will never, if someone says something and I think it's wrong, I've learned to not react at that point and actually think about, what are they saying? Why are they saying it? Actually, is that a better way of doing it? And I often do that now. And that's because of my, you know, my upbringing and my start. And also, I believe that there's more intelligent people around than me. Yes, I'm a bit more ballsy and I am consistent. So that gives me that success on consistency. But there's a lot of people around within our company that know their jobs better than I do. And it'd be pointless me employing these people to then go, right, you're doing what I say. And they wouldn't enjoy it, you know. And I don't want people, you know, our work lives are a massive part of our lives. You know what I mean? We sleep for 8 hours. We work for 8 hours. We drive backwards and forwards for a couple of hours. You know what I mean? You have dinner and then there's a few hours that they... So if they're, you know, if they're not enjoying their work, then what sort of lives they have? And as I say, everything from the point that I put all that stuff down, that misuse down, and I was not homeless, is a bonus for me. because I honestly didn't think this would happen. So I think that everyone else should feel that. And for me to shut them down on their advice or their knowledge or the way they are, you know, people, it would be wrong for me to do that. And it wouldn't be the environment that I would want to live in. And I wouldn't want my family to live in that. And then I wouldn't want their families to live in that. So, yeah, what you've picked out is probably right, yeah.
Just a quick one. This podcast is brought to you by Antler Agency. If you'd like to discuss the sales and marketing or PR for your new homes, get in touch today.
So I would say that my personal values, I would like to think of massively influenced in Poole Homes in the way that we treat our staff. I would say that because of the way, I always think that good things happen to good people. And if I want my home environment and my life to be a certain way, which is always given forward, and what's given to you freely, you should pass forward. I believe you need to, if I want that at home and I want that for my kids and my wife, then I need that in my whole life, because things breed. You know, if I'm at work, if I'm angry and I'm resentful at work, then that compounds in the wrong way. So yeah, I would say that within the way that I like to be, is massively within our office and the way we are within our whole work is, I don't know if the word fun is correct, it's just relaxed. And people, I just sit there sometimes and just sit back, because we have an open office as well. We don't have, no one's sat in an office on their own. People are, they freely come in and out the office. They're never questioned of what they're doing, because the environment and the values we have, I don't need to do that. And it's just very relaxed, and the productivity we get through that, I can just see that, just sit there and watch it. And what we try to encourage is less people coming to me for issues and more they try and sort their issues out. And that doesn't mean a bad issue. That just means, well, we've got a situation on a build that the plans are not correct, or this is not correct, or the spec's not correct. And they will then, I can see them, they're all talking between themselves. Instead of coming to me and going, oh, we ain't done that, they would just go, right, that needs sorted. Is that being sorted? Yes. And that's the sort of culture we have within the company. And that definitely breeds from what I'd like to see, yeah.
And I think that's really interesting, because a lot of organisations, they have the vision first. You know, they have this vision to build some sprawling great entity, whatever it is. And the values are kind of, oh, well, you know, we need to have some values to stick on the wall, so let's put those on after. And I suppose the fascinating part of Imperial is that those values are kind of front and centre. You know, that is your company is your values. You're living them and breathing them every day. And I think for a lot of companies, they're trying to shoehorn values in.
Yeah.
How would you say that those values have influenced your journey as Imperial?
They're massively, because when people join us, it's a bit of a culture shock within the construction, you know, development side of things and industry. And I think that they just don't want to leave. Mm. I get that feeling. Maybe they do. And I don't want to leave. It's just like, I would say it's just such a happy place to be. There's no like slogans or, because I think you're trying to force something onto people. And it's more of a, who am I? How am I going to act? How am I going to behave? Then people around me are going to be like that. And, you know, we have reviews of our employees every 6 months, which is a beautiful thing to do, really good. And it helps our company no end. And there's always the feedback at the end that they're really happy at our work. And as you said, it's not through us doing any training of trying to get them focused. It's not any slogans running around. It's not any newsletters of saying, oh, we're doing this, we're doing that. It's just actually people being themselves and trying to, you know, the biggest thing you can do is empower a person. And if you've got someone that doesn't want to be up there, yeah, it's very difficult to get them up there. But if you want to get, if someone's up there and you want to get them down, you can do that. And in Imperial, we try to empower everyone, but we don't lie about the empowerment. It's not like, oh, you've done really well if you haven't. If there's an issue that we need to work on. Then we'll go, how can we help you? Do you need more help? Do you need another member of staff? Did that member of staff not help? Let us speak to them. You know, that's the conversations we have. And I think there's not one person there that would not, and it doesn't matter who they are, would not come to me and go, oh, I just need a bit of help, mate. And this is like this is one of the best things that, and people might think this is one of the best things that ever happened to me. We employed a member of staff about probably 4 months ago because our account side was getting overrun. So we needed to make a decision on that. And we've just gone to audited accounts because of turnover and stuff. So it's quite a big change. And we employed this girl, and within 6 weeks, she went, Joe, shut up. But to other people, they would think, to me, that was a beautiful thing. Like, I was like, that is amazing that to people on the outside, I'm like the MD of the company. We've got a new employee in within 6 weeks. She has the relaxedness and capability of just saying, Joe, shut up.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So that sort of encapsulates our company. And I sat back and went, that's brilliant, that.
Yeah.
So
she'll do. So I'm going to check you on that now. So Mel, talk to me now about your journey and your role and what it's like to work for a company like Imperial compared to some of the companies you've worked for previously.
It's completely different. I've worked for quite a few of the nationals since I was about 18. So quite a while. It's nothing like the nationals. It's much more relaxed. Joe is approachable. Rich is approachable. Ben is approachable. You can say anything without fear of getting it wrong. They might take the mickey for a couple of minutes, but it's all done in jest. You never feel berated for anything. It is a relaxed environment. You can have a laugh, have a joke. We all work incredibly hard. We want to do Joe proud. We want to do Rich proud. And the same with Ben. We feel like we're Imperial. It's not like working for one of the nationals where you feel like you're a number, you do your job, you go home. We're helping Imperial grow. We feel like we're part of that company. There's lots of things I've learned today about Joe's journey, but we can feel that we're part of something special. There is no targets, which is completely different to nationals. I've never worked somewhere with no targets, but I've also never worked so hard. Where I've had targets before, it's kind of almost a barrier. You get to that target and then like, oh, okay, well, what's next? With us, where there isn't a target, we go above, way beyond what we probably would have achieved. The kind of respect that they have for us, the trust they have in us. Like Joe said, we can come and go from the office whenever we please. We don't check in. I can be out on site for 3 days. They'll have no idea where I am. No one's ever messaged to say, what are you doing? Where are you? Are you actually working? There isn't that. As long as we give trust and respect back to these guys, it's like a breath of fresh air. It, like I said, it's incredibly relaxed. And we do work hard because we want to. We're never told we have to work hard. We do it because it's one, who we are. We've got a great little team, sort of us middle management. Our site managers are fantastic. We've got a really good team, but we also know that we have some support higher up.
So how do you, and this might be a question for both of you, but how do you make that work? So from a business point of view, a lot of house builders have come up to sort of half year and the, you know, the thumb screws were turning to get numbers in. How do you balance like the business need to ultimately hit targets for funding, that sort of thing, versus the cultural piece of not having the vision and the necessarily the kind of plan around numbers?
I'd say the biggest thing is we have no shareholders. So me and Rich and Ben are, we own the company, which is a little bit different of our level of company. You've usually got shareholders or massive investors that are pulling strings. We don't have that problem, I'd say. So that helps us tenfold, because it's only down to me, Rich and Ben who decide we need to get them units done, we need to get them units done. Obviously we have a overhead and a thing to feed, but that all gets forecasted in a cash flow. You know, we're 2 years in front on that at all times. And we don't have to pay shareholders dividends. So the money can roll in. You know, as I said, we're not greedy people. We're quite happy with how our lives are. So we don't have to take massive chunks out all the time. So I think that helps massively, that side of it, that we're set up completely different to other bigger entities than ours, that they're getting told what they need to get in that year.
And as an employee, Mo, how does that impact on you? So when you think back to your experiences working for, you know, targeted national house builders, what's the difference like?
I think it just means that everything's really natural. Joe has got a really good ability of finding the right people. He knows his strengths, he knows his weaknesses. There's no arrogance. So he knows who to employ to be able to get the job done. He knows what the other members of staff are good at, what they're not good at. So he has the right fit with all of us to make sure that we work well as a team. We all complement each other really well. So it's just natural. Mm. It's not difficult to go and get those sales because we want to. It's not, you're not targeted, you're not beaten up about whether you haven't got something that particular weekend. There's no phone call on a Sunday to say, where's your sales for your week? It's just natural. There really isn't, we put the natural effort in because we want to. It's not expected of us, which is just lovely.
And in your role, so as in your sales and marketing role, obviously Joe, having not had the kind of corporate route in and the experience of, you know, departmental responsibilities and what marketing looks like maybe for a house builder, how have you found that? So trying to kind of shape a department and a requirement in an organisation which perhaps doesn't have that understanding and experience.
If anything, it's probably easier because I don't have a marketing background as such. I have a sales background with national developers, but I love marketing. I find it really interesting. I'll buy anything. So for us, it was just, again, it was at that sort of natural organic thing. We wanted our brand to show off. I knew what Joe thought of his brand, of his company, and how he wanted the world to perceive it. And I think we've just run with it. We've been able to show ourselves, we've been able to show how beautiful our houses are. They're lovely. They're so different from other developers. So we can show those things off naturally. So I think if anything, we can try stuff. We can experiment with things. We can try different marketing ideas. We're not stuck to this corporate role where you have to be on brand. If we want to tweak our brand a little bit and maybe show something else, we do corporate days with Elliott's where we show them how to build a house. Those kind of things maybe wouldn't be tried if you were a national developer. We can do more localized stuff. The stuff we do with Street Scene, we probably don't show off enough as to how much we do work with them, how much we do raise. But yeah, we can try all sorts. There's no limits. There's no sort of corporate identity that we have to follow. We can just give everything a go and kind of see what works.
And how does your values as an organisation and your experience, Joe, how has that impacted your customer journey? So are there particular decisions that you've made along the way as to, well, because this is, you know, this is who we are and this is what we do, this is how we treat our customers?
I think that the customer journey is always a difficult one because customers are customers and we try our hardest to make sure that everyone's happy, but as you know, in the world, that's very difficult. But our customer journey is Mel. She sort of runs that whole side of it and she takes them through the whole process. How much time she finds for customers, I sometimes think, well, where's this time coming from? But, you know, she'll sit down for 4 hours to go through choices and go through plans and go through the whole spec of that. And then she, following with the solicitors, she'll speak to their solicitors, you know, she really does put a lot of effort in, which is, it's a beautiful thing to see because a lot of these people have bought their first house or they're not quite sure what's going on and there's a lot of fear around buying a house. It's like the biggest investment that anyone will make. It's probably the nest egg for when they want to downsize later on. It is a long process, but Mel, like, puts everything into it, like, wholeheartedly. But yeah, so I'll sort of let you answer a bit more of that.
I think just our customers mean a lot. They really do. I've had experience of good customer service, bad customer service. We don't always get it right. We genuinely do. We'll hold our hands up and say that we're not perfect, but we just try and be as supportive as we possibly can. Customers aren't always going to like us, but we try and give as much information as possible. We try and be as open as possible. We've started a client portal. People are a bit more 24/7 these days. People might want questions answered at 9 o'clock at night on a Sunday, and we might not always be available. So we've started a portal where we are completely open. The clients can log in, they can see all the details about their development, lots of frequently asked questions. We do progress photos, so they get to see every stage of their house being built. They might live miles away, they might not be able to look at their property on a weekly basis. So it's just trying to keep that communication open. And trying to be a little bit more 24/7 so that people can gain the answers that they need. But yeah, our customers just mean a lot to us. Without them, we don't have a business.
So as you look ahead then, so to the next 10 years, I know you've grown very organically. So you may well say, well, we'll see where we'll end up. But where would you like to see yourself and Imperial Homes in 10 years' time?
I always think that we sort of overestimate what we can do in a year and underestimate what we can do in 10. So Imperial is now 10 years this year. We've just had a 10-year birthday. As I said, we when me and Chris started it, we started on a 2-unit site. You know, and today we're on site at the moment, and I think we're it's about 170 units in build at the moment. And yes, there's been some dark periods of that within that 10 years of there's been a lot happening in the world. And as I said, we've got no big investors behind us. We've got no shareholders. We, you know, it's all within the company. Is and when I say organically built, it's just injecting the cash back in and really doing the proper deals to make that happen. So I think the next 10 years, I'm not a person that stays still. I'm unable to stay still. So if I think I'm staying still, I'm going backwards. So we will keep pushing it. There's no reason at all why it can't double or triple in the next 10 years. I mean, it'd probably be harder not for that to happen due to the fact of, as I said, compounding, momentum, consistency. The staff we're bringing on are just getting better within their jobs. As Mel said, we've sort of got a bit of a middle management now. They're starting to lead their certain sectors. You know, when we sort of stepped Mel up to marketing and sales manager, she was gone then. As soon as we saw that that opening of her, because she came on as sales and then she kept doing a bit of marketing, and we saw that sort of opening and we gave her that title, she was gone. And we're doing the same with a lot of our middle management staff. They're starting to take more responsibility. So as they start to grow, and as I say organically, as they organically start to grow, then the company will grow, because the three of us that are sort of, it's not at the top at all, but the three of us that are leading it, we go as far as they are behind us. So as they're growing, we're growing. And so, the company's just going to go from strength to strength. I don't see any, we're not going to stop building housing. So we're quite dynamic with how we change our, you know, as I say, we do social contracting. And so whatever sector at that point, we can just push into that a bit more. So yeah, there'd be no reason why. The hardest bit's done. It really is. So it's just now refining it, getting the right people behind our mid-management and pushing our mid-management, you know, as far as they can go, really.
And what would you say now, so looking back to 14, 15-year-old Joe that was lying on that floor in the public toilets, what would you say to him now?
Good question. He'd probably have asked you for a tenner. So... I would say to him now, it would be all right. I think people get very worried when they're in the depths of something that it's not going to be all right. And I think I would definitely say to him, as I've said probably in this podcast 20 times, it's all about consistency, but it's got to be the right consistency. So, you know, within that darkness, there will be light at some point. And I always think that every day starts within the dark. So it's as soon as it goes 12 o'clock, it's dark. The sun will come up. It will be all right. You just need to keep pushing. And that's probably all the advice that he would have wanted at that point as well. Because if you'd have gone too far, you're like, shut up, right? It's fucking freezing. So, yeah. Just to think that there is a light, yeah, would have been enough, I think, at that point, yeah.
Excellent. Look, Joe, Mel, thank you so much. I appreciate, you know, your honesty and your openness. It's a fascinating journey, and it's just amazing to see, you know, where you are today and the lives that you're changing, you know, in your staff and the homeowners, you know, that you're providing much needed homes for. So thank you very much, for coming on and giving us your story. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to hear more about the sales and marketing of new homes, don't forget to hit subscribe today.